Je m'écoute, Elfimane. Slowly coming out of the meditation, coming back to our cameras to continue our practice in our class today. Any thoughts or sharing before we start?
Hi, good morning, everybody. I thought that was very helpful, Kobe. I have fallen into desiring an outcome from meditating, you know, touching into some wisdom about myself, or, you know, making it too much of a goal. And so this was really nice. Just, I don't have to stop thinking. I just return, and it was very good. That was very helpful. Yeah, because I think I've taken a few steps backwards in my ability to relax. And I guess the only other thing I wanted to mention is psychology and spirituality. I was talking with Jason, and he brought this up, and I think, and you brought it up this morning, and I think there's a marvelous connection between the two of them. And So I really appreciate how you've started today. Thank you.
Thank you, Christine. It's really on spot what you said on the no goal for meditation. Yeah. This is a trap, a really big trap for all of us in the practice. It's like we expect to get some results or to be in a certain way. And there is a beautiful sentence in Buddhism, Zen Buddhism, phrase. It's called, when you see the Buddha, kill him. And what they mean is like, when you see this image of like how I should be, this is actually an obstacle in your path. So it's like when you have an image of like the Buddha was sitting in a lotus position without any thoughts, completely enlightened for days and nights, without any disturbance. And I should be like that. And this is how my meditation should look like. This is exactly your enemy, quote to quote, on the spiritual path. So when you see the Buddha, kill him and connect to reality. Connect to here and now. Here and now, what's happening? My mind is busy. I am tired, or whatever is going on. It's okay. It doesn't really interrupt. It's just there. And I become aware of that and just like allow that to go through me. What came up to me today in my practice is that it's like you become a vessel almost in a meditation. And many things going through, it's like a thought arises and then it goes away. And it's like you are like a window and you look at the street and you become the window itself. And like people pass by and then you have, if you're in India, you have like a different, animals going around and like different sounds happening and suddenly someone knocking on the door and it's like, but you just like, you don't react to any of those. You just like pay attention to them. You see that they are there. It's okay. Nothing special. Just noticing that. And so this is really good. And then the second thing that you said was really important, actually. And I think it's exactly what is very attracting to me in the whole, and the whole field of the connection and the bridge between psychology and spirituality. And if I may say a few words about that, we have psychology focusing on the human personality, behavior, thoughts, patterns, and so on. And spirituality focus on the nature of the mind and the soul itself. So we can say that that psychology is focusing actually on how to improve our personality, improve our story, to make a better story, to live a functional life. If we look at Freud, by the way, Freud said that the goal or the success of a therapy, it would be to function, to have a relationship, and to have a job. And this would be someone who is no longer obsessed by his neurotic nature and is able to go back and function in the society properly. And this is where it many times stops, like this is the goal of in many cases of psychology, is to be able to function properly in this life, to be able to love others, be able to come in peace with yourself, and so on. But spirituality is a whole different arena, because spirituality speaks about the soul. Now, the soul you cannot fix. Maybe you can improve your story, improve your personality, but the soul is perfect already. The soul is enlightened already. We don't need to do anything to the soul. Yeah. So it's like the soul and the spirituality is focusing on this dimension of our life. And we can see that each one of them as an individual, as like a separate from the other, is not complete. Especially for nowadays when like we experience different kind of psychology, different kind of sociology in the world, in the modern world. So if we go to the shadow, so to speak, of the psychology, is an obsession of fixing the story without paying attention that there is an authentic self that is completely enlightened already. And if we go to spirituality only, without the dimension of psychology, we are already enlightened and there is nothing to do anyway. And you see that with like people in psychology going to therapy for years and years and years and not improving. And you see that with spirituality, that people become kind of out of whack, you know. It's like they have this spiritual bypassing where they just go, it's like, oh, everything is one and everything is good and there is love, and it's like they don't even pay attention to anything that happens in their life. They become a bit of, you know. So the spirituality and psychology, when you bridge them together and you put, okay, there is a soul, there is a dimension that is infinite and it's there. We want to pay attention to that. We want to get connected to that. But we also want to work on the story and to kind of bridge and like being able to work with the difficult emotions that we have, the different behaviors that we have, and yes, improve them and also get more connected to our authentic self. And it's have to come together in order for us really to make a transformation in our life. Because if you focus only in the psychology, you are stuck in the loop. And if you focus only on the spirituality, you might get out of balance. So bringing these two worlds together is really fascinating. And I think one of the main teachers that teaches that today, there are many, but ones that I came across with and I study from even personally is Rob Pierce and Reggie Ray, as I mentioned him many times before. I wrote it on the, there are many more. So it's like you have Tara Brach doing Buddhist psychology. You have Jack Kornfield that is also doing some Buddhist psychology and understanding between spirituality, bridging in between spirituality and stuff. It's even like, there is much to say about that because there is a need for the Western philosophers or Western practitioners, teachers, to create this bridge because the way that we think today is very different than the way that we were thinking like hundreds of years ago when these systems were practiced and were very common. So it's like almost bringing something completely different into our life, or it's not inadequate to our life. It's like inadequate to the problems that we face with. So there need to be an adaptation. And this adaptation is very much pronounced by certain teachers, and it's really beautiful to see how they are able to bring these two worlds together. And yes, so today we are facing with a very interesting verse. And this verse is pushing us a bit more, you see? It's like it becomes more and more challenging. This week, in the beginning of the week, we were focusing on the, if we lose something, how do we react when we lose something? How do we react if someone is stealing something, some possessions from us? And then today, we speak about suffering. Basically, how do we use suffering in our path? Yeah. So it's like last time, how do we use loss in our path? And today, how do we use anything else like suffering in our path? And we have to understand, and this is the text, and we repeat that many, many times, that everything is part of the practice. And everything is important. We don't throw anything away. We don't want to get rid of anything. We have this problem now that we have, like, for example, plastic, and we need to get rid of the plastic somewhere. And we cannot really get rid of that because it's like kind of an alien substance that the universe doesn't know what to do with that, and it stays forever. But it's like more, if we look at more eco-friendly understanding of this of the universe and how it used to be so far, we had like everything is used. You peel the vegetables, and the peels of the vegetables go to the soil, and they fertilize the land, and so on and so on. And even like the feces of animals, of even human beings, can be used as such. If everything is like, we don't have all the chemicals and so on that we use. So it's like everything is actually important, and there is that kind of a recycling system in the universe. It's like, it's really a new idea that we need to get rid of certain things. So it's, if we look at the nature of the universe, everything is usable. Everything is useful. We don't want to get rid of anything. Everything, we use everything in order to to help us. And the same way, especially with this remark that we had just before, we use anything that happens to us in our soul, in our mind, in our spirit, in our psychology as well. And negative emotion can be used. It can be recycled, can be utilized, can be sublimated. Every encounter that we have with any person, even if it's not a nice encounter, can be used. We don't want, in this text, the main message is we don't want to get rid of anything. We want to use everything. Everything is part of us. Everything is part of the path. And everything is the practice, which is like a motif of this text. Everything is part of the practice, and we have an opportunity to work on ourselves with each and everything that happens. So if someone is coming, if someone is very nasty to us, if someone is ugly in a certain way, it's just helping us to meet these qualities as well in ourselves and to work with them, to work on inclusiveness. I think, like I mentioned it sometime, I don't remember which class was it, of Gangaji, where she speaks about inclusiveness. Everything is part of our consciousness. Thich Nhat Hanh speaks about it as well. The Heart Sutra speaks about it a lot. Everything is part of our consciousness. Everything is part of our mandala. And there are no things that we actually put aside. And it's a good maybe a moment to reflect on Gandhi and a meditation that came out from this kind of way of thinking, which is called Feeding the Demons. Gandhi was in one of the protests that he did in India, was really, really loyal to the value of non-violence. And there was a point that the police was about to come and stop the protest. And the followers of Gandhi told Gandhi, maybe we can put some obstacles, maybe we can put some glass or some nails on the road so that the cars will not be able to pass through. And Gandhi said, no way, I'm not doing that. It's like, let them come. And we will face with them in the name of nonviolence, in the name of truth. We don't want to deny them. They are part of us. They are not different than us. We are all Indians. We are all one. And they came to this place, and he gave them chai. No, he gave them chai and he gave them cookies. Yeah. And then they ate the cookies and they drank the chai and then they left. You know, so it's like feed your demons. It's like this is the meditation. Maybe we'll do that in other occasion. Feeding the demons also in our own selves, and also, and this is what the verse is about, so and this is coming up to my mind, also the people that are wanting to hurt us, or our enemies, actually the proper way, according to Gandhi and according to this text, instead of like fighting them and trying to reject them and to kill them is not really helpful. And actually, by feeding them, you can make an enemy to a friend instead of keeping the enemy as an enemy for years and years and years and years. Someone need to stop the cycle. You see, in Israel, we know it so much, in the whole world, not only in Israel, but you know, I'm Israeli. I right away think about it, because it's a very common terminology to speak about the Israeli-Palestinian conflict as a cycle of blood. It's like they kill, and then we kill, and we kill, and they kill, and it's a cycle that never ends. Who knows, like how it started and like what we are fighting about. It's like it's. I don't think like people really understand, not all over the world, but also not even in Israel, what is really the dispute over there. But it's like the, it's like a big cycle that is like keep on going, the cycle, and someone need to break the cycle. If each and every time that they yeah, it's like the enemy do something to me, I will give the same kind of attitude to them, and I will do the same way to them, it will never end. Someone need to put an end to that and say, no more, I don't play this game anymore. We change the rules. You're not my enemy. We are from the same blood. We are from the same family. You know, both of us, the Palestinians and the Israelis, are from the same father. So different mother, but the same father. So we are brothers. Yeah. Sometimes say cousins, but it's not cousins. We are brothers. So treating our enemies as friends can be a very powerful thing to do. Let's read the verse and get some comments about that. If in return for not the slightest wrong of mine, someone were to cut off even my very head, through the power of compassion, to take all his negative actions upon myself is the practice of a bodhisattva. This is quite harsh. Like this is really, it's easy to say, yeah? So easy to say. But basically saying, if someone is doing harm for you, to you, for no reason, he didn't do anything to this person. It's like you even didn't like look at this person. It's like you were completely minding your own business and someone is coming and hurting you. The instruction here, the practice here is to, through the power of compassion, to take all his negative actions upon myself. And this is where I actually change, break the cycle. And then what's so beautiful about the Tibetan Buddhism, and this is a Tibetan Buddhist text, is that they don't just talk in one way and behave in a different way. Yeah, they walk the talk. They really behave in this way. And it's like the Tibetans were invaded by the Chinese. Tibet was invaded by China, and today is controlled by China. And many lamas, spiritual teachers of Tibet were actually in a kind of a prison, torture chambers of the Chinese. And they, at some point, through different kind of intervention of the UN and other stuff, some of them were released. And it was really amazing to see the way that they react. There are some YouTube interviews with lamas like that. And the Dalai Lama even asked some of them, one of the famous example is the Dalai Lama asks one of them, what did you fear the most when you were in this place, a horrific place of the Chinese regime? And he said something that is very much this verse and very much this strikes me. It's like how powerful a person can be. And he said, I was fearing the most that I will lose the compassion to the Chinese. He realized that for himself, he is going to completely lose it, lose complete hope, lose everything that he have if he lose his compassion to the people that actually harm them. And so this is where we, you know, it's like most of us probably will not get to this level, but also most of us probably will not get like tortured by the Chinese. Yeah. So, and will not get into this situation. So you have much more kind of smaller in comparison. Not that I'm saying that it's not difficult or it's not a valid difficulty and that it's good, but certain things that happens to us would be in comparison smaller to these events that the Tibetan were dealing with. And the practice is to practice compassion in this time, even to these people that are actually hurting me for no reason. And then the thing is, and we said it before, that we have two options. Yeah, one option would be to go into anger, into frustration, into depression, into resentment, into negativity, and to keep on with this cycle, and into revenge. And by doing that, what we are doing is actually keeping our negative karma. So when someone is doing something like that to us, our negative karma can be healed if we treat that with compassion and love. Then we can move on from there and we can go even a step further in our spiritual practice, in our spiritual evolution. But if we keep the resentment, we actually keep the bad karma. We keep the negative karma. It's like Tenzin Palamo giving this example. It's like having a wound and and you start keep on scratching and touching the wound and always dealing with that and you make the wound even stronger and even bleed even more, because you're always scratching yourself and always being obsessed by the wound. And just by leave it alone and give it some love instead of fight it all the time, it would be much better. I think a YouTube title that it's like, we'll not be able to fight the coronavirus. Fighting is not the way here. Yeah. So it's like, when we treat something as enemy and we push, we actually maintain, sustain the negativity and keep it. And it's we can say that in a way about the coronavirus. It's trying to fight it and isolate it, but no one will get it. But all the experts are saying, and I'm not an expert in these matters, but in any matters anyway, but the coronavirus will keep on spreading. It's just slowing down the pace of people getting infected. So at the end of the time, and that the coronavirus will be over, if it will be 2 years, 3 years, whatever time it will take, same people will be infected. It's not that you save people from being infected by locking them in the house, you're just making the pace lower. So you cannot really fight that. Yeah. So it's Hercules, I think this is the way to pronounce it, Hercules. Hercules, the Greek guy.
I think it depends on what English accent you're using, but Hercules, more or less.
Hercules. Yeah. Yes. So he had a monster, and this monster that he wanted to fight with. And this monster is like was growing, had a big head, and he wanted to fight this monster. Yeah, it's like to see the comparison to Gandhi is very, very interesting. So he cut the head of this monster. But what happened is that the head was still alive, and he didn't know what to do with that. So he buried it really deep in the ground. He buried the head really deep in the ground. But then after a while, the head like grew out of the ground and like started like attacking him from the ground. And this is like what we are many times doing with negative stuff. It's like we want to get rid of them. We want to fight them. We want to eliminate them. But then we are actually sustaining them by doing that. Okay. So this is few things to say about that. The second thing is about the second arrow. It's like we saw last time. The first, we lose something, or someone is stealing something that we have. And we have two options. One would be to get like a lot of resentment and like feeling really bad about that. And kind of griefing of these things that we lost. But, and then here again, the same way someone is hurting us, and then we are wanting to hurt him back, or wanting to, or becoming really angry or frustrated. In Buddhism, there is a teaching that says there is like a first arrow and the second arrow. The first arrow is an arrow that comes from life. Someone stole something, it's inevitable. Someone did something bad to me, inevitable. I cannot control them. I don't know what will, how to stop these kind of things completely. It happens that bad things happen. And the second arrow is our reaction to the first arrow. And this is the most important thing, and this is why we started with this meditation today. Our reaction is what counts. Yeah, so it's like things, bad things will happen. They will keep on happening. For the Buddha and for the lamas of Tibet, many, many bad things happen. But when these bad things happen to you, how do you react will determine the continuation, like your spiritual maturation. And if you react with like resentment, you actually hurt yourself even more. You actually hurt yourself even more. It's like you and this is called the second arrow. As if there is the first arrow, you cannot control. It's coming from life. Life is sometimes painful. And the second arrow is you adding more pain by taking another arrow and stabbing yourself with this arrow. And this is can be with guilt, can be with a lot of very like pushing, anger, violence, aggression, and so on. So really working on our reaction and creating a situation where our reaction is compassion rather than anything else. Now, I wanted to tell you about a small story that have happened to me, because many times also bad things happen. And at the moment, you're not spiritual enough or whatever, you're not mature enough to know things, to know how to react. You didn't have this knowledge about the compassion. Maybe we didn't have the ability to be compassionate at that moment. So one thing that can be used is the meditation that we are doing usually. And we did that in the 21 days, and we did it here last week, of Tonglen. And going to this situation and practicing Tonglen, going to this situation in our mind and practicing Tonglen. So when I was a teenager, and this is like, it's really up to you how you use that. It's like you don't have to do it every time, or you, it's like, be careful not overdoing that, or not doing it to an event that was really, really too much for you to bear. Maybe getting support and doing it with someone rather than just doing it by yourself. But I want to share just a bit to give you the example. When I was, and it's like I got to realize that in this online platform, I become much more open about my personal life. And maybe it's like a kind of, I become more and more like all the teenagers that expose everything in front of the camera and speak about everything that they do. At least I'm not telling you about all the food that I'm eating and like and all the yeah. So anyway, when I was 15, I moved the school. I went to a different school, and there was one girl that the many people were kind of teasing her and like kind of harassing her, like not sexually, but they were like kind of frightening her. And a few boys, which I know who they are, like a couple of boys, they wrote a letter to her and like threatening her and signed in my name. And I come to the school one day, and it's like a whole mess, you know? It's like everyone is like looking at me, and I don't really understand what's happening. And the police came, and I get kind of into an investigation about this letter. And this was like really the beginning of the first few days in the school. So this is how I opened my high school in a way. And this colored like the way that, and obviously I didn't do that. And even though the police investigation was really difficult and like very, very daunting and like, and, but it obviously colored the whole time of high school for me, the way that people looked at me, the way that, the teachers looked at me, the other people, and I knew who the people that did that. Yeah, and years, it was like, think like much of my approach to people was very much shaped by this experience. Yeah, it's like for years I rejected people and I didn't trust people because of this experience. And when I became aware of these texts and these meditations that we are doing, Reggie Ray and Rob Pierce, like all this bridging between spirituality and psychology, I came to do the Tonglen to this event and to the people that did that to me, you know, to the people who like were writing the letter. And I know for sure that they were writing the letter. And it took me about a month trying over and over again, because at the beginning, there was a lot of resistance to even do Tonglen to these people. Right? Because the pain that I have experiencing because of these people was so big. And like just imagining the picture, like seeing them in front of my eyes were bringing so much of anxiety and anger. But after a while, really insisting, like to generate bodhicitta, to do the breathing, to do all the practices that we share together, and to bring it to the heart, and like to send it to them. I'm not saying it was easy. It was really difficult. One of the most difficult things of my life. But after I did that, after I was able to send this light to them and to feel their suffering. You see, people do not do bad things because they are happy. Yeah? People are doing bad things, people are doing such a wrong thing because they suffer. And like we gave the example of the Chinese as well, like their consciousness is much, much lower than the Tibetans. They are in deep in the samsara, in the suffering. And many people that do these kind of things and they hurt others, it's coming from their own hurt, coming from their own suffering. And I can tell you that like when I was doing this meditation, Tonglen, to these people, to these boys, first I came to understand that they were just boys. They didn't know much. They didn't know any better. The second, I came to see how much suffering there is for them and how much suffering there was for me from this situation. And the effect of this process that I've done with this event that was there in my life was, I think, changed the way that I feel about people in general. Yeah? I can trust much more. I can connect much more to people after this meditation series that I did for myself. So this is also a kind of an invitation. And if you wish, we can do maybe meet together and do together. It's like a guided meditation specifically for this kind of events or something like that. But it's when we do these kind of things, we actually clear a lot of tension from our system. Yeah. So we have so much tension that is sitting from this event and from other events that happens in our life. And we start like to really know ourselves so well and to clear a lot of the negativity that sits in our heart. It's like by sending compassion to these people, I was able to move on. I was able to not let this situation to shape my life forever. Yeah. And it's like there are certain things and that people have been through that are much worse than what I'm describing now. Much, much worse. And this is where psychology and spirituality need to be, to meet each other. And we need to go to these places, but very carefully, very gradually, and being able to practice the compassion there, both towards ourselves and towards the other people that were involved in this situation, and to release the negativity, to release the resentment, the anger, the frustration, and to build up more compassion and understanding, and to be able to move on from that and to release. Not all of us are like the Tibetan and like this kind of verse that's saying right away, it's like something bad happened, right away know how to send compassion to the person that is doing bad. Sometimes it's not happening. It's like it's too bad, it's too overwhelming, and we don't know how to do it. We don't know how to send compassion at this moment. But we can do it retrospective. We can do it later on, and it's good enough. So things that have happened in your life, and you can do these compassion practices. Well, as well, exactly like we said in the beginning of the class, where the meditation that we do is helping us to have more clarity and to be aware of our thoughts. Same way, when we do more and more Tonglen, more and more compassion practices, it comes more as an automatic response. Yeah. And I think like the coronavirus taught us that a lot. Like, is like, did we see it as a bad thing that happens and like crush us, and we want to fight it, and we want to fight the authorities or fight whoever like the universe, the virus or whatever, or we are actually seeing this as an opportunity for growth, learning from that, and using love and compassion. It boils down into fear and love, really. I know it can be like kind of a cliche, but it's like, are we operating from fear or are we operating from love? Yeah. So, but when we operate from love, nothing can, we are indestructible. This is Vajrayana. We spoke about it a lot. Vajrayana. Vajra is the indestructible path. Vajra is indestructible. Yana is path. The indestructible path. And this is the text that we are reading together. It's from the Vajrayana. It's like, how do we utilize fears? How do we utilize hurt? How do we utilize depression? How do we utilize suffering that happens to us for no reason to become actually something that lifts us up into a new dimension in our life? Does it make sense? Any thoughts or sharing before we finish for today?
I have maybe a question, I don't know. The phrase taking upon myself in the text, when I think of compassion towards someone who did something hurtful towards me, or just for someone who needs compassion, I don't connect it to taking something upon myself just to, I don't know.
It's remember the Tonglen Shira, receiving and giving, giving and receiving. So it's like you receive their negativity, you take them into the bodhicitta, and you kind of bring light and happiness outside. So it's not that like you take it in order to keep it. You take it in order to have it through the system experienced. It's like the thing with the unresolved karma, and this is maybe something that we can expand on in the next few times. Unresolved karma or unfinished business have to be experienced. If there is like suffering, like even from the example that I gave today, and it's like this suffering that I myself had and the suffering that this boys had, and if it's not experienced, really fully experienced, the pain of this situation is not fully experienced, then it stays there. It stays there in the body, it stays there in our consciousness. It's like we cannot move on from that. But if we really inhale it in, the black, the darkness, the claustrophobia in, and we experience the pain in our body, in our mind, then we can move on from that. Yeah? So it's not like taking it and keeping it. It's taking it, experiencing it, and moving on from that. And this is how we resolve unfinished business and like unresolved karma. Does it make sense, Shira?
It makes sense. I still feel like there is some contradiction of this phrase, but maybe it's terminology.
Yes, and don't forget that it's Tibetan to English.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's a translation. It's like how accurate can you be? Unfortunately, I'm not speaking a Tibetan, so I will check in other translation, because it's a good point here. I will check in other translation and see exactly what it means, this specific word of taking on myself, upon myself. I think it's very much related to the Tonglen.
Yeah, I can see the connection. I also feel very connected to what you said. I don't remember if it was this time or last time, about when you have negative feelings towards someone, usually it's because you see something you don't like about yourself in them. So sort of taking, so taking their problems and dealing with it, it's sort of dealing with your own.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. Exactly. Yes. Yes. And then you broaden your consciousness by doing that, because you're no longer limited to your own narrow world. You open yourself up. And even if it's not yours completely, you deal with someone else's problem, you suddenly expand. Because, and this is exactly what the Buddha had, and his enlightenment was basically understanding and experiencing the suffering of the world, not his personal suffering necessarily, the suffering of the world. And this is what we do in the Tonglen, you know. It's like we said, like, let's experience the breathe in the suffering of the all sentient beings and the animals in the jungles and the people that are hungry in Africa or wherever. And when you experience that, you are not longer limited to your own story. You are consciousness itself. You are the whole world. Yeah, you broaden yourself. Yeah.
Yes, thank you. Well, I feel that. I feel that when you think of, when you try to connect to other people and to feel their whatever it is they are feeling, then yes, you definitely connect more to everything.
Yes, please, Kirby. So when I practiced this type of compassion, I find it self-propagating, self-perpetuating, that the more I do it, the more powerful my compassion becomes. It's not easy to do it in the moment, like you said, but certainly afterwards. And the other thing I wanted to share was my personal experience about meditation. I sort of find, or I treat it as a gift to myself. So there's many a time, well, shall I just put the TV on and watch a movie, or shall I just go and eat something, or shall I, well, many options. But if I sort of, no, it's like an act of self-care. So if I say I'm going to meditate, and especially if I do it with intention. So if something's up pressing on me or on my mind, and I say, right, I'm going to meditate at this point in time so I can help myself to deal with that problem, then I find it like a gift that I've given myself. So sort of an act of love. Meditate, even it's an act of love by meditating. Sorry, thank you.
Thank you, Jason. Thanks a lot. So I think our conclusion from this verse is that we have what, it doesn't matter what happens outside of us, it matters what happens inside of us. Yeah. And this is what we want to cultivate throughout our practices and in our spiritual growth. How to react to things in a whole different way than what we usually react. And to liberate ourselves and others by doing that. Yeah. So thank you everyone for participating and being so beautiful. As always, and we will meet again on Monday, and have a great day, a great night, a great afternoon. Namaste.
Namaste.